was a press, or at least a presentation was given to an earlier trustees meeting, and I think at one of the previous council meetings there was a request to actually also get sight of it. So I guess Henry, Katrina.
Thank you, Gavin. Good afternoon, everybody. Yes, as Gavin said, this was something that we put together earlier in the year and talked about with the trustees, and we just thought the standard now has been out IFRS 16 for actually literally 5 months, and it would be a good opportunity to really just go over with you, look back and assess how it was achieved, and also obviously importantly what we can learn for future standard setting. So Katrina and I will spend about, I don't know, 10 minutes walking through the material and the presentation, focusing on mainly on the lessons for the future, and then we'll open it up for comments on the lessons learned and advice about how we develop standards. So although Katrina and I are obviously talking about leases, this is just using leases as an example. We're interested in your feedback on the process for developing standards more generally. So if we move on to slide two, obviously just to emphasize again, as we've spoken with the council about this project, IFRS 16 is a major change in financial reporting. It's clearly bringing onto the balance sheet many leases that have previously been hidden off the balance sheet, so it's affecting a company's assets. Obviously, very importantly, it's liabilities, but also it's affecting the income statement and including important measures like EBIT and EBITDA and the cash flow statement. Now, this is a slide I'm sure that you'll have seen before. It's one that we've actually used quite a lot. We actually do think it's a very effective slide as well. And it just illustrates how significant off-balance sheet leases can be for some companies. So, you know, we have the example here with the company where the off-balance sheet debt is 66 times more than the on-balance sheet debt. So it just illustrates how important IFRS 16 is. So moving on, so having highlighted, of course, it's a much-needed standard, and it does bring about significant change. Because of that, we always knew that this would be a project that would take time, and it would be a project that would attract some degree of controversy as well. And just put on this slide here, but of course that this fact was predicted actually by the SEC well before we started this project in a report that they did back in 2005 on off-balance sheet financing. And just put the quote here, but you know, they rightly saw the strong resistance, significant controversy, that it would take the standard setters time and resources. But of course they said that the outcome would be worthwhile, and that is something clearly, obviously, the board thinks has been the case. And it was really because of the significance of the change that the board just took every effort to seek the views of stakeholders throughout the process and to consider the views of stakeholders very carefully. We really wanted to have, if you like, a watertight and a comprehensive due process. So this just summarizes all the discussions that were held. But just maybe just picking on just a few of these, I think some of the things that I think were particularly important, I think was in the last phase of the project after the second exposure draft, which is the way we interacted with the investors and the analysts. And that really proved to be very, very important feedback that was very helpful and was used to a great degree in the final round of decision making. The other thing is that we did a lot of field work on site with companies, and that allowed us to really just get beyond the accountants and talk to people in IT and the contracts, and we got a really good sense of cost implications. And again, that was really useful to the board's decision making in the final round of deliberations. And we also, I think, spoke well and effectively with all of the board's advisory groups. And I think the timing worked really well. I remember we came to the council, and it was at a really good point because the board had considered the feedback, just the high-level themes from the feedback on the second exposure draft, and we spoke to the council and the other groups before we went into the final round of key decision-making. And then just the other thing I wanted to highlight was really the communication and the effort that we went into to try to communicate more in an accessible way in the last phase of the project. And we issued project updates making the case for change. And then we issued a project update on the definition of a lease, which was a particularly sensitive, if you like, part of the discussions. And all of these, I think, were really useful and really just showed people how we were listening and responding to the feedback.
Thank you, Henry. So on slide 5, you'll see, of course, the project was added to the ISB's agenda back in 2006. So it did take almost 10 years to complete. And of course, with that in mind, we thought it would be useful just to look at where the time was spent, and this slide sort of summarizes that at a high level. So to maybe just mention a few points, I think the feedback we received early in the project didn't really indicate the significance of the concerns that we received later on in the project. And because of this, really, I think hindsight probably suggests that perhaps more staff resources in the early stages of the project perhaps could have been helpful. And also hindsight says that the board spent a considerable amount of time discussing some proposals that ultimately weren't acceptable by stakeholders. So that was particularly around measurement and unless or accounting. I think the feedback on the 2010 exposure draft indicated that significant opposition, and the board listened and made extensive changes, but of course that created the need to re-expose. And I suppose again, since the 2013 exposure draft, I think the boards again listened very much to stakeholders' views, and we analysed very, very thoroughly those views. We tried to focus on what was most important, where there might be the greatest benefits, and try to reduce costs where possible. And on the most contentious topics, as Henry mentioned, we tried to communicate sort of what had been done and how the feedback had been considered, and in particular to communicate that on a timely basis. So I suppose what can we learn from this? And on this slide, slide 6 and 7, we've tried to draw out a number of points that we think were incredibly important in the context of the leases project. Now, all of these may not be relevant for all of our projects. I would certainly hope that future projects may not be as contentious as the leases project proved to be. But nonetheless, we think there's some, hopefully, lessons that we can take forward. So we'll just add a little bit more flavour before handing over to you. I think the first thing to say is, of course, there is always what we've called a delicate balance between proposing any form of major change. Major change cannot be rushed. Stakeholders often need time to get used to thinking about things in a different way. We as the ISB cannot force change. We must listen. We must analyse, we must decide, and we must persuade. And all of these things take time, and probably not least the persuasion part. Alternative views that we hear from stakeholders, of course, must be considered and analysed thoroughly, even if ultimately we decide not to go down those routes of those alternative views. But in saying that, when there has been extensive consultation, when we've heard all the arguments, and when there has been thorough analysis done, then of course there is a time when final decisions must be made. And I suppose all of this sort of delicate balance requires often delicate and some difficult judgment to be made throughout the project. We're constantly, you know, making those judgment calls, testing them, speaking to people, getting buy-in, and of course re-evaluating them as is needed. The second point here we drew out was the extensive consultation needed. I think, again, thinking in the context of any major change, speaking to all interested stakeholders, including those who are most opposed. going beyond what I think some might think of as enough, what's the minimum we think we maybe need to do, and really going beyond that, particularly on any of the most controversial topics. And I suppose here we really thought about, well, look, not everyone is going to agree with the decisions that we reach. However, we think it's really important to ensure that no one can question the process or really feel that they haven't been listened to. It's important to address criticisms directly and on a timely basis, and we'll come back to that. And also, by the way, a way to become hopefully a bit more efficient in that process is to try and target the topics for discussion and those with whom we discuss. So let's spend time doing outreach that will result in the greatest benefit, in a sense, in terms of the information we receive, you know, rather than just necessarily discussing everything with everyone. And I think that becomes particularly important in the later stages of a project. The next point we drew out of thorough analysis, of course, which seems pretty obvious, but maybe just to say what did we mean by thorough analysis of stakeholder views. And I think here we really mean thinking about, look, it's really important to understand both what stakeholders' views are, the reasons for those views, and by the way, sometimes to question the feedback received rather than necessarily just taking everything at face value. So I think sometimes we need to be, you know, we need to be careful not to be too fast to react to feedback. Equally, it's wrong to be too fast to dismiss concerns that are raised. I think what we learned on leases as well is on those most important and controversial topics, it's often better to maybe take a month or two extra when re-deliberating and when considering them, and maybe go back to respondents, re-discuss, just understand the points raised slightly better, and ultimately taking that month or two extra actually means that you gain, you know, sort of time and efficiency in the process going forward. And as Henry mentioned, it's often good to involve others, and I think particularly we benefited from involving some of the advisory bodies. And finally, of course, you know, leases was a joint project, and as Virg just mentioned it in that context, that of course joint projects add complexity. When I mentioned the delicate and difficult judgment calls that of course are made all the way through a project, that naturally is made more difficult if two separate boards have to agree in those. And of course, when topics are controversial, then it's often that the two separate boards might hear different messages from their respective stakeholders. So it does mean then that the boards may have different issues to resolve when considering those things, which of course in the past has made it more complex and has sometimes made it more difficult to move forward together. So of course that naturally means that it adds some time to project timelines. Now, finally, I'll mention communication. Henry mentioned how important that was, and I think it really was incredibly important on leases. And what we did there was we published a series of what we called project updates from around the middle of 2014, right the way through to 2015. And that was initially done largely in response, by the way, to some criticism we received about how we had dealt with feedback we received on the project. And I think on first hearing this criticism, my initial reaction was, in the words of my children, I think, I was saying, well, it's not fair. And the reason it's not fair, I thought, is because, look, we've done so much. We've considered all the comments we've received very thoroughly. We've spoken numerous times to all the interested parties. We've spoken numerous times with the board members about these alternatives. We've looked at specific contracts. We've written very long and detailed board papers that support the decision. So what more can we do? It's not fair. But I think when I paused and decided to become a grown-up again, I realized that actually the criticism was fair, in that I could see just how difficult it might be to really understand how and why the board reached particular decisions. And actually the reason for that was almost not because there was no information available. It was actually almost the opposite. It's almost because there was so much information available. And I think that the transparency of our process sometimes means that there is any amount of very detailed information available, you know, including in board papers and in other documents. However, I think we learned that it can be difficult actually to see how all of those different pieces of information, you know, come together really for anybody who doesn't have the time to follow each specific project incredibly closely. So I think what we learned from that very helpful feedback and criticism actually was that it's incredibly important to communicate in an accessible way, using a much more sort of reader-friendly, snapshot-type language, which we try to do in those project updates and ultimately carry through in our effects analysis, to include numbers and examples where possible, and for example, to include information from external third parties. So it's not just the ISB thinks or says, but what are the other information that influenced our decision making. I think as well that if we were able to communicate the need for change and the benefits from change really from the start of a project, then everything that comes thereafter would work in a more straightforward way. Again, I think we learned that just maybe using theory or narrative around saying there's a need for change is not necessarily sufficient, at least when it's very, very significant change. But if we can have numbers and examples, that can be very persuasive and really make a difference. And I think finally, just talking about communicating the work done. So again, the importance of explaining, you know, how the board has considered the most important feedback that we've received, including, of course, those criticisms or different views, really explain the why. Why has the board reached that decision and how it has got there? And also, by the way, the importance of doing that on a timely basis. And I think particularly in major projects that really take a considerable amount of time to debate and even then to draft, I think that communication between due process documents becomes particularly important, because if we just wait until the point where we hit a due process document, it's really not timely at all in terms of how we communicate some of those reasons why. So maybe with that.
Okay, thank you very much. I think that was very useful. Anyone like to make any comments or questions?
Thank you, Katrina, and I'm not sure who forced you to be brave enough to come with the LISA standard, because it probably took the longest time. And I thought that was a good explanation of what transpired. I'm a little less clear as to what we need to do going forward, because 10 years clearly cannot be the benchmark. If we look at the work plan, the agenda, if any two major standards or research projects take 10 years each, I don't think the community will be waiting for that long for us to respond to them. And I was just wondering, we need to make a distinction between, is the board waiting for more information, or is the board just trying to manage the existing information with the various stakeholders? And if it's the first, then I totally agree we have to wait, because if we believe we have incomplete information, we don't need to, we shouldn't step forward. But if it's the latter, then perhaps a guillotine process works better, because it will force people to come to a conclusion, to compromise, or to accept and move on. But if you don't have a guillotine process, then people will always say, I can drag this one more year, I can drag it one more year. So just some thoughts and feedback. Perhaps, Hans, at the end of it all, we'd hear from you too.
Alastair?
Yes, thank you. I liked several of the things you said, and I liked the table in the beginning of your presentation where it says about the retailers which went bankrupt because, well, not because of the off-balance sheet leases, but, you know, it's a very good example. I'm not sure if that project was really kicked off with that information more or less, but your basic idea to say really clearly show why there's a need to act would be very helpful. And the other thing, when you said people like to see examples and tables, I mean, definitely. And the thing is, you're very likely, when you publish some examples, so you'll get the feedback, this is completely oversimplistic, and this is doesn't capture the key points, and so on. But this is exactly where you have precise feedback rather than general, written, uncomfortable expression. That's my comment.
Thank you. Let's check.
Thank you. Patrina, your presentation concentrated on the process until the standard was issued, and that was that helps to understand probably why it took so long. But equally important is what happens afterwards, and one key lesson learned, I guess, is the effects analysis that is very, very helpful to further build acceptance of the standard. And this will definitely help with the endorsement of the standard in Europe. And I also think that those effect analysis are very important when it comes to the organization's public accountability, because it really is an important signal to all those stakeholders. And if I may just have one comment on the actual content of this effect analysis, it's a very good document and a very comprehensive one, but it would be even better if it included different scenarios, different alternatives that the ISB decided against. For instance, it decided not to improve IS 17, and if it spelled out clearly the reasons for not doing so, I think that it would even enhance acceptability of the new standard. Thank you.
Andrew?
Thank you. Well, I certainly welcome the exercise. It's clearly very important after a huge project like this to take some time to reflect on what went well and what areas there might be to make improvements going forward. Yeah, that said, I certainly wouldn't start from a premise that 10 years is too long. I think you've got to take the time it takes to get it right, and getting it right, as you've said, Patrina, is not just a technical exercise, it's about building momentum for change, which is a much softer thing. EFRAG has consistently asked the ISB to, I guess, have more due process over the years, starting with the upfront evidence gathering phase and conducting effects analyses actually throughout the standard setting process at some level and going through to the back end phase and things like an expanded approach to the fatal flaw review. So I'm not going to turn around now and say do all of that, but in less time. So I think with this example, I certainly wouldn't sacrifice any of that due process in the interest of timeliness. I think that would be a big mistake. If there are some lessons to be learned, I wonder if like the approach going forward of having a more robust upfront evidence gathering phase might have suggested that there was less of a case for change on lessor accounting. Of course, hindsight's a wonderful thing, but yeah, maybe the new approach would have given some insights there. And the discussion paper was mentioned already, the DP looked at a very basic example, so kind of swerved around a lot of the issues that turned out to be difficult, like how should we define a lease with the new model and dealing with option periods and variable payments. I think an approach that actually tries to identify the difficult issues and as far as you can tackle those earlier in the process would be preferable, but again acknowledging that hindsight is a wonderful thing. Thank you.
Alinda?
I've been involved in the insurance one since I think 2007, and so you could say that is taking too long as well. One of the lessons I think that isn't up here, and maybe purposely so, is that we've made a lot of progress in the last 5 years, and I think one of the reasons for the progress in the last 5 years is because the interaction and the communication between the board and between all of the constituents is a lot better. Having been involved in that pre-2011, a lot of things were very confrontational, and so you actually couldn't have a good dialogue. And so I think one of the things that isn't up here is that the huge improvement actually in the interaction between the board and all the constituents. So I thank you for that, and think that's just an unstated item up here.
Anne?
I just wanted to comment shortly on a remark that was made. So you issued the discussion paper, and then you issued the exposure draft 2010, and then some major elements popped up across stakeholders. Now, I'm doing research on the due process, and I look at comment letters, and what we notice is that in the discussion paper phase, preparers are less involved. We know that users are not involved at all, but we see that preparers only become awake when you issue an exposure draft. So maybe getting to preparers when you issue a discussion paper would be great if they could have given you the input as to what really bothers them at the discussion paper phase. Maybe you would have avoided a second exposure draft. So I think that's also an issue. We, if we look at comment letters, we see that preparers only get awake at the stage of the exposure draft.
Yeah, I think that's a very good observation, actually. Sue?
I was just going to comment on that. Could it have been less than 10 years? And I agree with some of what Andrew said, because I think there's maybe a limit to how much shorter it could be. I think some of the work we're doing on problem definition, we hope, is going to help. So if we'd been more maybe confident in what we were solving, and also had done some more work on the case for fixing lessor accounting instead of just saying, of course, symmetry would be great and going for that and spending so much time on it, maybe it would have made it more efficient. I think also the point that Petrina made about going back to people who have written to us and really discussing in detail what the consequences of what some of the suggestions might be might have been helpful. So, for example, that might have surfaced more quickly how complicated it might be to move to a two different types of lease model, which was the second exposure draft, and might have sped things up. But I think maybe the change element aspect of it shouldn't be downplayed too much. I think perhaps if we hadn't gone through the pain of a process where we proposed reviewing lessor accounting, where we went through with a process where we actually proposed two different models for operating lessee accounting, maybe we would never have got to the stage where we hopefully have enough acceptance of the fact that we could live with the asymmetry of the lessor and the lessee accounting, and yes, a single model did make sense, because we needed to go through the pain to bring everybody along with us on the change management journey, and that just takes time.
Jake? Thank you. I think first and foremost I'd like to congratulate the board for the perseverance and ownership in actually seeing this project over the line. When you put that timeline on the screen there and say actually you worked on this for 10 years in the face of considerable pushback, I think it's fair to say, then I think that's to be applauded, because I do think we are in a better place as a result. So I'd like to give you my congratulations. I hear the comments about 10 years not being too long a time, and I think all of us around this table would certainly agree that to get to the right answer, or to get to a very good answer, 10 years is perhaps not too long a period of time if you want to finesse the answer appropriately. I do worry about how that's perceived outside of this room and outside of this organisation, because I'm not sure, you know, the public at large would necessarily accept that 10 years is an acceptable period of time. And so I wonder if there's a question there about whether there are other things the board could be doing to help users of the account understand the exposure of businesses like this to leases. Now, that's obviously said with hindsight. I mean, could they, for example, have asked for disclosure of what the minimum lease payments would have been had you applied a finance lease model and disclosed that whilst the debate on actually where should the model be continued. And that's maybe something that could be reflected on in the future, whether 10 years is acceptable to other stakeholders, and actually whether there are small things that could be done in the background to help users in the meantime. Luke?
Thank you. Just very bluntly, I wanted to react to what you just said, Jake. Yes, we heard during the process, we heard that disclosures would help, and disclosures only were the solution, and that could have been the easier way, and we could have saved 5 years. But the result would have been that then we would have to wait until 10 or more years before we undertake the next phase, which is to put on balance sheet, and maybe never do it, because people say that's enough disclosures. The other point I wanted to stress was in response to Andrew's remark. Yes, it took 10 years. I don't think we could have saved more than 1 or 2 years out of those 10 years. We made 2 mistakes in the process with hindsight, and I quote unquote mistakes because they are not mistakes. We tried to do lessor accounting, which was not on the map at the beginning, and we explored the dual model, which we finally gave up, and that our US colleagues did not totally give up. If we had not done that, I think we would have had more resistance in the end because we would not have explored and unturned every stone. I think we had to unturn those stones and to explore those. There were some merits, theoretically, in doing lessor accounting as well. But the outcome of the exploration of that solution was not meaningful either. So we had to explore it and then say, no, let's not do it. The dual model had some merits too, and we had to fully explore it. We finally decided not to do it. So maybe we added 2 or more years to the project, but in the end, we have a nearly fully converged standard with the US, and that is worth doing that, because having a project done over 5-6 years and not having a converged solution in the end would be a disaster. So I think we really did not do any mistake in the end, although it could be seen as being some U-turn, some unnecessary evolution of the project, but we had to do it really, I think. By the way, I'm one of the few board members who have been there from day one to last day on this project. I started with the beginning of the project. I end my term with the end of this project.
I think the key takeaway of this whole process is the importance of evidence gathering at the beginning. I could literally feel resistance drifting away when we came up with these numbers about 85% of leases being off balance sheet. The clear evidence that there's a lot of structuring going on to avoid the liability. And those examples of those retailers that went bankrupt and where clearly the balance sheet was misleading. Once we came with that kind of evidence, it became so much harder to resist the standards. So that's something that we knew or had a lot of anecdotal information, but we haven't gathered it in a systematic way and didn't bring it forward in a systematic way. So that's really what we should do differently in the future.
Okay. Thank you very much, Katrina, Henry, as well. I think that was quite a helpful discussion.